A Pod Forte Podcast.
The next CMO podcast explores topics that are on the minds of forward-thinking marketing executives, from leadership and strategy to emerging technologies. And we bring these topics to life by interviewing leading experts in their fields. The Next CMO is sponsored by Plana, makers of the world's first AI-based marketing leadership platform, and hosted by me, Peter Mahoney, the founder and CEO of Plana, along with my co-host, Kelsey Kraft. In this episode of the Next CMO podcast, we speak to Robert Rothschild, the CMO of Botify. Botify is one of the leading providers of technologies that help websites, e-commerce providers get found more effectively on the web to sell more products and deliver more measurable outcomes. Robert has had a fantastic career, starting from the digital advertising world at Digitas in Boston, working at some of the biggest software companies in the world, including Oracle, PeopleSoft, and SAP, where he was the head of global marketing operations and the chief of staff to the CMO. Then went on to become the CMO of leading technology companies, including Smartly and Botify. Robert has an amazing background and a fantastic story about how he reached the office of the CMO. I'm sure you'll enjoy the show.
Robert, thank you so much for joining the Next CMO podcast. We're super excited to have you on the show today. Would love to learn a little bit more about you and what you do for Botify.
I'm happy to be here, Kelsey. Thanks for inviting me. Yeah, my name is Robert Rothschild. I'm the CMO over at Botify. I've been here for a fairly short period of time so far, but my career spans many decades. And I would say, if you want to get a little background on kind of how I got to this point in my life, I started my career initially for a really small advertising agency, actually focused in digital marketing back in Boston many years ago, that eventually became one of the largest and most successful digital marketing agencies on the planet called Digitas. So I was part of the first 200 people that were part of that family back in the day when we were living in South, right across from South Station, and eventually moved into the Prudential Tower for those who are familiar with the Boston area. But that gave me an intro to a phenomenal group of brands, marquee brands like Disney, General Motors, AT&T, that really helped sort of lift off my career at the very beginning, at the early stages. And then after that, I transitioned into B2B SaaS and high tech technology software space. I worked for a number of the largest software companies that exist on this planet, spent half of my career in Silicon Valley, and eventually relocated back to the East Coast. And I'm based in New York City right now, working for Botify, as I said, which is a French-born, Parisian-born organization. We're a global enterprise software company. And we're really focused on enabling the most ambitious brands to leverage organic search as a high-impact performance marketing channel. That's what we do as a business. But yeah, happy to go into any direction that you'd like to take at this stage, but that's who I am and where I came.
Hey, thanks for the background, Robert. And like usual, there are always some really interesting connections that we have. So, of course, we're a Boston-based company here at Plana. And in fact, our offices, when we were physical, we've gone pretty virtual these days. We're right across the street from South Station. And on 695 Atlantic. We were at 745 Atlantic. 695 was my other job. I spent a while at a company called Speechworks that ended up being acquired by Nuance, but spent a lot of time in that area. And in fact, our head of is an ex-Digitas person. So he was in Chicago.
It's a small world we live in.
Yeah, and I'd love to dig in a little bit more to your background, Robert, because you have had a really interesting journey. I mean, as you said, you started in this quote-unquote small little thing. Well, it was small. I mean, a couple hundred people, of course, in the day became a real global force in digital. And so that had to be a pretty amazing ride. But then you spent a lot of time at, like you said, some of the biggest software companies on the planet. You spent time at Oracle, at PeopleSoft, at SAP. like real giants. And you really kind of cut your teeth there, it sounds like, especially in the marketing leadership area. And then ended up doing time at another great company called Smartly. And now most recently, you took the CMO job at Botify. So your second stint as the top marketing leader. But I wanted to talk to you a little. We talked really briefly before we jumped on, because you had a really interesting background at SAP, which I think is indicative of the future of CMOs, which is this combination of operational experience. You ran global operations for marketing at SAP, which had to be a fascinating job with the complexity. And you're also the chief of staff to the CMO at SAP, which had to be another amazing job. So tell me about the impact of those two roles in particular on your path to the CMO seat.
So really interesting question. So the first part of that story began with the global head of marketing operations. So I've always been a very data-driven marketer. I believe in understanding exactly what tactics and channels and activities you are executing or producing results, and then doubling down on those efforts in order to improve your overall performance. Probably goes back to my early days at Digitas and some of the things that I learned back then. But it's always fascinated me how there's this interesting blend in marketing of sort of the art and the science that goes hand in hand. And I've always been passionate about the art part. I actually started off my career before marketing. I went to school also in Boston to be an architect for a couple of years and decided that wasn't what I wanted to do, and then eventually shifted into marketing. But my love of architecture was really a love of design. And I'm deeply passionate about the simplicity of design and how it touches the emotions of individuals and helps them to uncover things that they may not have understood either about themselves or the world in general. And I just found that deeply moving. It's something that I'm truly passionate about. And I love how marketing gives you a platform to leverage design to do the same thing in a very different way. At the same time, sort of the right brain side of me thinks about the analytical components and the operational components and how to optimize and improve the overall process that exists within a business in a way that benefits the organization and everyone at the same time. So there's this really interesting blend of the two things coming together that sort of synthesizes itself in the practice of marketing operations, right? So sometimes it's a little bit like herding cats. There's a lot of different moving pieces and they don't necessarily all want to go in the right direction at the same. But if you can master that, if you can really understand how to put the wheels in motion to drive successful performance, it's probably one of the fastest ways to get very good at marketing that I can think of. And I didn't start there. I mean, I started my journey, going from the agency side to the tech side. My first entry into marketing was actually really in product marketing. So I started off a little bit of product management and product strategy when I was working at Oracle many years ago. That was actually the very dawn of the CRM world. So I started off doing that, which eventually led me into trying to understand how to relate technical capabilities and features into solutions that resonate with specific audiences, and looking at how to develop sort of my product marketing expertise. So I did that for a number of years, did a little bit of brand work, did some demand gen activity. So my journey to where I am now is a culmination of spending some time in every single functional area that comprises marketing. And I think that gives me more credibility when I'm talking to peers like myself outside of my company, but it also helps my team understand that they can learn something from me because I've actually done just about every single job that they have done that I'm asking them to do. So it's an interesting way to kind of pull it all together.
So I love the background, Robert, and it's probably compelling yet disappointing to hear for some people, especially earlier in their career, because they're like, holy cow, do you mean I have to go do all those things? It sounds like it's going to take me a long time. A couple of things I wanted to dig into, because one, I find it really fascinating that you had this background and interest in architecture, because I think people often think, real architecture, not product architecture or brand architecture, architecture.
Like physical buildings and things like that, yes.
And because it's this really interesting combination, which I think are skills that are critical for a CMO to have. It's this combination of, like you said, design thinking combined with the amazing amount of sort of operational planning and detail that's necessary to actually make it happen in real life. And the whole idea of taking something beautiful and make it functional and making it work in real life is something that is, I think, really amazing. And I also had an interest in architecture in my career early on and decided to go much nerdier and have degrees in physics and computer science. So the other thing that I think is really important about your background that I tell a lot of people, I find that a lot of the strongest CMOs out there did serious time in product marketing, because I think having that lens and this ability to translate technical product capability, especially if you're in a tech world, into business value, into something that is compelling and understandable for your target audience. And it really melds together the logical and the emotional in a lot of cases, being a really effective product marketer. So I think that's a great background. And the other thing that I suspect you had along the way, and I'm seeing this more and more as a requirement for CMOs. In fact, had a great conversation with one of the leading CMO recruiters recently. And she told me that the idea of financial IQ is something that's becoming increasingly important for CMOs. So do you see that? And did you have that in your background too, Robert?
Well,
financial part, sorry, that was unclear.
I got where you're going with that. No, absolutely. The marketing operations role that I had at SAP included a responsibility for the marketing budget and financial aspects of everything that we ran within the organization. And and that responsibility and accountability flows through to the seat that I sit in. So I think having a deep appreciation and an understanding for the implications and the impact of every decision that you make as a marketing leader on overall profitability and performance of the business is a key element of success on a number of levels. In order to be a successful marketer, obviously you need to produce the results that people are expecting of you, right? And some of those are short term, some of those are long term. I truly believe in the long game over the short game, when it comes to that respect. But also when it comes to having a credible seat at the table in the C-suite, you need to be able to understand and communicate the language of the CFO and the language of the COO, right? I mean, those are two strong advocates for you if you are able to successfully collaborate with them in a way that is mutually beneficial, right? I've known far too many former CMOs who were at direct conflict with those two individuals, and it doesn't usually end up in a very good situation. So I think it's better to embrace that nerdy technical side of you that needs to understand those things and leverage it. So, I mean, at the end of the day, we're all trying to build a successful business, right? So if I'm not cognizant of how the decisions that I and my team are making influence or impact the overall success of the business, that's not going to lead to a positive outcome for anyone.
Yeah. And it's interesting, Robert, because the smartest CMOs that I know, and I know there are most people who've achieved that position are very smart people and very capable people. But the smartest ones that I know really embrace that, the idea of being able to communicate in the language of the business, not just in marketing speak. And I think this idea of your background that probably gave you your unfair advantage was this combination of sort of that operational side and that chief of staff side, where my guess is most of the successful chiefs of staff were people who could create that glue layer in the organization and have that ability to kind of connect all the constituencies into the office of the CMO, which is obviously a very consequential role at a place like SAP is massively consequential. Right. Yeah. But understanding how to translate the goals, the needs, the initiatives into the language of the revenue organization, into the financial organization, into the product organization, I suspect that was a piece of what you ended up having to do to reach across organizationally. And would you say that was helpful in kind of solidifying your ability to communicate in more of the language of the business as a marketing executive?
Absolutely. What I said earlier around the idea of being in a position where each and every role and function within the marketing organization, I've personally had the ability to do that job at some point in my career, lends credibility within the marketing team. In my role as chief of staff, what was interesting there is many of the individual functions and departments across the company had their own priorities. They had their own individual activities that they were running against, and it becomes very siloed. I mean, in an organization, I don't even remember how many, there were over 120,000 people globally working at SAP. I was part of a division within SAP, but we had thousands, tens of thousands of people within our division. And if you look at the challenges associated with putting together a set of key strategic initiatives that may be very important, that are critical to the overall success of that business over the next 3 to 5 years coming out of the C-suite, translating that set of initiatives into a defined set of activities that each organization across the company or each department across the company has to contribute to in order for us all to be heading in the right direction is a very challenging job, to say the least. It definitely hones your skills at communication, collaboration, and also elevating the detail level up to I'm not quite sure the right way to say this, but basically elevating the individual activities that teams need to focus on up to a level where each team is contributing to an overall plan that helps us all get in the right direction. Yeah, it was an incredibly challenging place. But I will say that whole siloed mentality, which exists and has a tendency to exist in a very large organization, doesn't go away when you get to a smaller company. You still have to figure out a way to get people in different departments and different functions to work together and collaborate in a way that's effective. So that skill has definitely paid off dividends over the years as I've continued on in my career.
Yeah. And I wanted to ask you about the transition from giant global organizations to more, I'd call medium-sized organizations. You're not in a startup, right? You're in a Series C company now in Botify. Smartly was sort of in a similar scope, well-funded, decent-sized organization. Right. But I wanted to ask one more follow-up, which was in that role that you had, in this sort of glue layer role, I have a theory that I'd love you to opine on, which is that there's maybe the obvious kind of thing that you could understand from your communication that, hey, you need to get people aligned. You need to be able to communicate effectively. But what I've seen there are two in particular things that are, I think, important skills for whether you're a leader in an organization or you're in this role where it's even more intensified, where you're in this sort of staff supporting role where you have to make this happen. And one is truth telling and two is empathy. And let me explain what I think they mean. So truth telling is sometimes something that is difficult for marketers. Not that they lie, but the point is they have to position their whole career. And you as a product marketer especially spend a lot of time positioning. How do I communicate value to this thing? But in some cases, you actually need to be a little bit more clinical and scientific about what's going on. And you actually need to assess things internally and say that, hey, this isn't working. So I could spend a lot of time saying, hey, this is a great thing and I can tell you why what I've done is really smart. But the reality is maybe it didn't work. And that idea of truth telling and being more scientific about it, I think is important. And the other thing is being empathic and being able to understand the perspective of the other functional groups within an organization. What does this mean to you? Because you may have, and it sounds like you like to take sort of this longer term strategic view, and that's really important in an organization. At the same time, you need to dovetail that with this sort of short term kind of quarterly impact. If you're on a revenue team, as an example, I got to make my number this month or this quarter. That's the most important thing, and really understanding the impact of those two. So it sounds like you have a great background in those areas. Do you think they were important or am I just blowing smoke?
No, I would say, to be honest, I think what you just described in terms of the tendency for most marketers to put a positive spin and position things in the best possible light is definitely a tendency that I lean into personally. That being said, I think my experience in operations and more of the data-driven analytical side of me balances that out so that I look to the data to help inform whether or not my position is accurate and whether or not there may be an underlying source of data that could potentially poke holes in whatever my preconceived beliefs may be. On the empathy piece, I think you're spot on. There are different priorities, short, medium, and long range priorities. And depending on who you are in an organization and what your personal goals and objectives may be, my priorities may be, my point of view may be in complete contradiction to your point of view. Understanding and at least recognizing that conflict exists is like the first step in the process to figure out how the two of us can work together to achieve, maybe not achieve both of our goals, but at least come to some sort of compromise that allows us both to be as successful as possible, and maybe even find new solutions that neither one of us thought about that could produce a better outcome than either one of us could have ever imagined. So I think sometimes you have to take a breath, step back in the moment. A lot of times people get very passionate and committed to whatever their personal point of view is and focused only on satisfying whatever need they have. I think a little bit of empathy goes a long way, and understanding we're all people. Every single one of us has our own objectives, our own perspective, and our own point of view. And we also have emotions that influence the decisions that we make. So as long as we are aware of and considerate of what everyone else's point of view is and take that into consideration, I think ultimately it produces a better environment and a better situation for everyone.
So Robert, I had a question on kind of what Sure. we had just talked about previously about the silo, because I think this is really something that you touched upon that's lacking, or it's constantly showing in the marketing world and these marketing teams, is people have different goals that don't really line up to the whole marketing goals or the company. What do you think of someone that, you know, is a campaign manager? I think this is something that us, the team at Plana, we talk about pretty often. So wanted to get your thoughts on what value that would bring and to help basically get rid of this silo type of marketing.
My first answer to your question is, I don't think there's a silver bullet. I don't think there's one thing that solves this problem. If there were, I think all of us would probably be sitting on a beach somewhere right now, sipping margaritas, because we would have found out the holy grail to marketing. And there's no one thing that can fix it. That being said, I do think the idea of having one individual, if you're a small team, or a group of individuals that are responsible for looking at program planning overall. Like when I was at SAP, we had a fantastic member of our team, and his role was program planning, and which I guess you could call campaign planning too. And it was really around looking holistically, let's say over a predefined time period. It could be for the next year, it could be a 2-year time frame, and translating what are the overall goals and objectives or the primary strategic initiatives that the organization has pulled together that demonstrate where we're going to achieve our goals in the next 3 to 5 years. And then translating that into a series of themes and topics. And then within those themes, overall programs, and the programs contain campaigns, and the campaigns have a series of tactics and activities to drive towards them, and really structuring that out almost in the same manner as a project manager would, to sort of orchestrate everything. I think a professional cat herder is always a good person to have on you if you're able to do that. I don't know if that individual will have the easiest job in the world, because it is their role to break down those silos. Maybe not to break them down, but at least to understand how do we leverage resources across the team to get something done. I mean, if you're executing a campaign, there may be design elements that you have to work with the brand team to pull together. There may be content that you have to produce that relies on your content marketing team. At the end of the day, you'll produce ads that need to be run through your demand generation team, your digital marketing teams, coordinating all that activity and making sure that everyone knows how they're contributing to the overall success of the campaign and what role they play in that process is very important. And I think it may not completely break down the silos, but it at least helps you work more effectively as you bob and weave between the silos is probably the best way to say it.
It's almost like the role of a showrunner. And I actually like the analogy a little bit because it really is about sort of telling a story. And depending on the size of the organization, sometimes the CMO is in that role of the showrunner, and sometimes they're the executive producer. It really depends on sort of what scale and how many of these, how many shows you're running at any given time. Right. So I did want to, while we have you on the show, Robert, because of your perspective, especially at Botify, I did want to ask you to tell us a little bit of what you're seeing in the world of search and content marketing too, because Obviously Botify has this amazing visibility and perspective into what's going on in this world right now. And I think what we're seeing with all the changes going on in paid right now, that I suspect that the idea of creating engaging content in making sure that it's findable and aligning it to your overall strategy has to be incredibly important for people. So give me a sense for what do you think are the biggest things going on in this world of content and search right now that CMOs should be aware of and focusing on?
That's a good question. Let me just give you a little more detail on what it is that we do. So it might help for context. So ultimately, what Botify does is Botify is a software platform. It's powered by artificial intelligence and a proprietary unified data model. We bring data from a variety of sources to build this. Ultimately, what we do is we ensure that web and mobile sites are optimized for search. We increase the number of pages that get seen, indexed, and ranked by most of the major search engines. And ultimately, as you guys know, that's the foundation of being found by consumers in today's dynamic digital environment. I don't know, I could ask each one of you, are you shopping for something today? And where did you go first? And my guess is you probably started in a search engine. You probably went to Google, Bing, or somewhere else saying, where can I find the coolest new set of shoes or whatever it might be. So that's kind of what we do. And we do that for some of the world's most visible brands, companies like Expedia, Crate and Barrel, Carvana, New York Times, L'Oreal, et cetera. And we help them ultimately just be found by consumers. Search has always been a very important channel for marketers to reach consumers. And if you look at search, it's often been divided into paid search versus organic search, right? Paid search is often viewed as a very strong performance marketing channel that produces the right types of results given a certain level of investment. And organic has often been viewed a little bit more as a black box, a little harder to understand how do you invest and apply resources in organic search in order to produce the same type of results. What I'm seeing and what I believe is happening even more so right now is, especially in the past, in the current environment we are in, with a privacy first era that we're moving into, the luxury and the ability for you to tap into third party data to understand who specifically you are targeting and to reach them effectively via paid channels is becoming much more expensive, and it's becoming a lot less effective. So it creates the conditions that are perfect and ripe for an increased investment in organic search, right? So, but I don't think it's an either or. It's not like, I'm not telling you stop spending in paid and spend everything in organic. Search is one channel that is complemented by both paid and organic activities. And you have to use them together in a very coordinated fashion in order to truly reach your audience. Search is not a channel that most CMOs are underinvesting in. I think the last Gartner CMO spend survey that I saw that came out earlier this year still shows that roughly 20% of the overall marketing budget is going into search. And that's been pretty consistent year over year. I think it's just a matter of making sure that it's not an either or situation. You need to invest in search because that's where your consumers go to find your products and services. And if you can't be found, it doesn't matter how much you've invested in the most beautiful website on the planet. If most of it is invisible to the search engines because you haven't properly addressed some of the underlying technical characteristics that go into building a website that can be found easily by consumers, then it's kind of a wasted investment. So we help you improve that investment.
Oh, it's great. And it's incredibly important, obviously, in becoming, I think, a more and more technical problem to solve. Yeah. And one of the things that I'm excited about with search is it's becoming much more consumer friendly and useful in a lot of ways. Some of the structured content stuff, as an example, and I imagine it sounds like, I think e-commerce is a big segment of your business as an example, Robert. And I'd suspect that the idea of being able to present a consumer with a structured product result, as an example, is something from search is something that is really compelling to the user because they get what they want right away. Compelling to the seller because obviously they're going to get their thing in front of the people the right way. But there's probably a lot of technical stuff and content stuff and strategy that has to be in place to make that work. Make sure you're showing the right product to the right people in the right way, et cetera. So I suspect there are a lot of moving parts required to get that to happen.
There are a lot of highly technical aspects of SEO that we probably shouldn't go into right now because I think most of the audience might fall asleep. But suffice it to say, one of the stats that I heard when I first joined this company, which really shocked me as a CMO, is if you look at some of the world's largest websites that are, and I'll preface that by saying retailers, e-commerce, companies that have a very large number of products to sell, large number of SKUs, for example. On average, those roughly 50% of the pages on those websites are completely invisible to Google or Bing. And it's because of some of these technical inefficiencies that a solution like Botify can solve for. And the challenge with that is it doesn't just stop there. If 50% of those pages are completely invisible to the search engines, there's a smaller percentage that are even indexed. And if they can't be in, it's a waterfall. If they're not indexed by the search engines, then they never get ranked. So if they don't get ranked, you're never going to show up in the search results. And if you don't show up in the search results, you'll never be found and your products will never be purchased. So it's this cascading effect where at the end of the day, if you have a very large problem on the front end, by the time you get to the end of that search funnel, I mean, we love the funnel in marketing. When you get to the end of the funnel, it could be less than 1% of your website that's actually generating any revenue. So if you can identify what challenges are preventing you from being found, indexed, ranked, searched, all those factors, it has a profound effect on your ability to protect and grow revenue for your business, which is really exciting. But then the other element of it is I love design. I love architecture. I love all that sort of stuff, right? So if I think about the level of investment and effort that the typical brand puts into building an amazing website that's beautiful, oftentimes we insert technology to help it become, to improve the overall user experience, the customer experience that consumer may have when they hit my website. Oftentimes we use technology like JavaScript. Okay, JavaScript it's been around for a long time. We use it extensively in a lot of different places. I don't know but JavaScript breaks most of the SEO rules that are in place. So when a search engine is looking at your website, it's going to render that page in a way that it strips out a lot of the JavaScript that's on the page in order to simplify and understand what it is that you're displaying to that consumer and use that to figure out how to index rank and everything else. If that happens, then a lot of the key elements of the product, like it happens oftentimes in your product detail pages on an e-commerce website, for example. So a product detail page might be, I'm a clothing manufacturer. I sell shoes, but within the shoe category, I have athletic shoes, I have dress shoes, et cetera. And then I get down to the individual product level. When I'm looking at that product page, it might have, it comes in these 5 different colors. It comes in these 6 different sizes and all these other aspects that are related to that product. A lot of that may be completely invisible to the search engine because the JavaScript has basically been stripped away from the results. When that happens, if I'm a consumer and I'm looking for a red size 10 shoe and the page isn't displaying that, I'll never find that product and I'll just go onto somebody else's website and find it there. So I know that was a little bit of a deep dive, but I don't want to go any deeper than that. But that's kind of the fundamental problem we're trying to solve for here.
No, it's super helpful to have that illustrated with a very specific example, Robert, because I think it makes it really understandable that, you know, that if literally you can't find the page, then you're never going to sell the product to someone who's accessing it via search. And the reality is most people start there. So that's a huge issue. Well, believe it or not, we're actually at the end of our time and I have a million more questions to ask you. So maybe we'll follow up some other time to do that. Sure. This has been really insightful. Appreciate your time, Robert. We do have one more question that Kelsey will ask you. And so Kelsey, take it away.
Yeah, thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. I think we covered a lot of bases here, but love to wrap it up. What advice would you give to those that are CMOs or aspiring to be one someday?
I would say, first of all, it's been a pleasure talking with both of you today. And my advice would be to always stay humble and to continuously and constantly be in a learning mode. There is not a day that goes by that I don't learn something new about this crazy field that we happen to all live in. And I think part of that is because being exposed to other people within the organization who have a different point of view and have a different experience than I do allows me to learn from them and to continuously evolve my perspective of what truly makes a great marketer. So the advice I would give.
Love that. Well, thank you again so much for your time today, Robert. Make sure to follow The Next CMO and Plana on Twitter and LinkedIn. And if you have any ideas for topics or guests, you can email us at thenextcmo@plana.com. Have a great day, everyone. Thanks, Robert.
Thanks, Robert.
Thank you. Thank you.
Pod Forte Podcast.